I've stopped signing bills.
It's pretty near 1 o'clock, April 13th. President R., Representative Lynn, Representative Keller, Representative Pruitt, Representative Gruenberg, Representative Holmes, Vice Chair Thompson, and myself, Chair Gatto. First thing, cell phones. They make noises that we don't want to hear during committee, so put them on silent. We have three bills before us today. In the order will I intend to hear them is HB 224, Sales of Nicotine Products to Minors, by Representative Seaton. Number two would be Senate Bill 15, Sex Offender / Underage Alcohol Offenses, by Senator Meyer. And lastly, Senate Bill 78, Liability Related to Alcohol McGuire. We will begin with House Bill 224, Sales of Nicotine Products to a Minor. Vice Chair Thompson.
Mr. Chairman, I move the CS for House Bill 224, version 27-LS0466/I, before the committee for discussion purposes.
Is there an objection? Hearing none, we have the committee substitute for House Bill 224 before us. We have staff from Representative Seaton's office. Katie, come on forward. Put yourself on the record. Tell us why you think this is the thing we ought to vote yes on.
Good afternoon. For the record, Katie Kester, staff to Representative Seaton. Thank you so much for the opportunity to present House Bill 224 to the committee. So my first time in front of House Judiciary, a real pleasure. House Bill 224.
You haven't heard of the initiation process yet?
Yeah. I believe
we can do it.
It's been threatened.
It fits in when you least expect it, so go ahead and get nervous.
Yeah, watch out. We're kind of evil over here.
Careful.
A bunch of friendly faces. You're asking me.
Now you're just kissing up.
House Bill 224 makes it a violation to sell or give a product containing nicotine to a minor, and the violation is punishable by a $300 fine. This bill came about last session when Representative Seaton...
Actually, it says not less than $300, so it's really, truly $300 or more.
You are correct.
Thank you.
And this bill came about last year when Representative Seaton was in committee discussing a different bill and realized there are all these new products on the market that contain nicotine that are being marketed as candy or it's toothpicks and things like that. Some of the products are dissolvable toothpicks, mints, dissolvable lozenges, strips. These are called dissolvable products, and there are actually new products on the market that are hand wipes and water that contain nicotine. And because a lot of these new products containing nicotine are not marketed as tobacco cessation products, they are not regulated by the FDA. Nicorette, the patch, those types of things are marketed for cessation and are therefore regulated. So House Bill 224 bans the sale of products containing nicotine to a minor, and the provision of the bill that allows for minors who want to quit smoking, let's say there's a minor who wants to quit smoking, says that as long as the product is being marketed for smoking cessation, is regulated for smoking cessation, they can receive that product with a prescription. They can purchase that product if they have a prescription from a licensed healthcare provider. This would cover a physician or a PA, a nurse practitioner. The original bill just said physician, and we wanted to open that up to other healthcare providers that may be in rural areas where access to a physician is more difficult. Or they can be given that product by their parent or guardian. And so that is the allowance that Representative Seaton wanted to make for smoking cessation, because there is still a real need for minors who are addicted to tobacco to be able to quit smoking. One issue or one question that the Department of Health and Social Services has brought up is the age in this bill is 19. And this is consistent with our tobacco law. And as you know, Alaska has the highest age for tobacco. The Department of Health and Social Services has asked that the age be 18 instead of 19 for banning products containing nicotine, because they have a tobacco quit line. And right now, if you're 18 and you call the tobacco quit line, they will send you Nicorette or a patch or products that are marketed and regulated for smoking cessation, not these new, you know, candies and hand wipes. They will send that to you and try and help you with cessation. So that is a policy decision that the department will testify to, that will be up to you guys, and Representative Seaton is okay if the committee would like to move that to the age of 18. And I just want to highlight a few of the changes between the CS and the original that I went over in the presentation. The CS creates a new section in AS 1176. The original bill added banning product containing nicotine to our statutes banning a product containing tobacco, and that was problematic because when you section 1176-100 was referenced in Title 43, which is all the violations for if you sell a product containing tobacco to a minor, which included revoking of a tobacco endorsement, included fines for a vendor, potential jail time for vendors. And so in order to not get into all of kind of those complications, we created a new section just pertaining to nicotine. And then the other change in there, which we already mentioned, was we broadened it from being able to prescribe a product containing nicotine from a physician to a healthcare provider. In your packet, you've got a number of abstracts and outlines from some studies that we have found, just talking about the toxicity of nicotine for minors. And, you know, there have been studies, there have been kids hospitalized for chewing too much Nicorette. And, you know, it hasn't been a topic that's been highly studied because not that many 10-year-olds, you know, are taking massive doses of nicotine. However, with the availability of candies and dissolvable strips, there's the real concern that there would be more nicotine consumption. The other study that I'd like to point out is Brand Week, which is a professional publication on advertising, noted that Camel Orbs, which is the little tic-tac-like mint, would not be marketed or geared towards cessation. So the real fear that Representative Seaton has is that as these new products come onto the market, they're really geared towards potentially a younger audience. They're not regulated, and it's a loophole that we don't want to be abused. As I stated, Department of Health and Social Services is available for questions and for their testimony, and I think I will leave it at that.
Good. I want to compliment you on the packet, which even has an 8x11 photograph of a woman holding little packets that look like alcohol swabs, and they're not. So Representative Holmes has the first question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Katie, currently under state law, these, for instance, the mints that would contain nicotine, it would be legal to sell them to somebody who is underage?
Yeah. Through the chair, Representative Holmes, that's correct. There's no state law that deals with nicotine. It just deals with tobacco.
Okay. And so under this, Mr. Chairman, just to clarify, and I think I understand it pretty clearly, but this would make it illegal to sell to somebody under age, but it would invoke only monetary penalties and not the license suspensions and other types of penalties that apply to tobacco.
Actually illegal to sell or gift.
Or give, yes.
Through the chair, Representative Holmes, that is correct.
Okay. And just one other thing that I just wanted to put on the record, this is actually a conversation my office had with Katie earlier, is the question of, there's a really good carve out here for the tobacco cessation products, and the question is whether, if somebody underage is trying to get the Nicorette gum, for instance, they could get it from a healthcare professional or from their parent. And the question that we brought up to Katie earlier is, what if you have somebody underage who doesn't want their parents to know they're smoking and wants to get access to this? And do we really want it to be a violation to give Nicorette gum to somebody who wants to quit smoking regardless of the age? And that's not an issue that I want. I'm not prepared to come in with any kind of amendment today, but it's something that we brought up that we may, going forward, try to work with Representative Seaton's office on.
Well, it just triggers this in my mind. If you wanted to give up heroin, should you be able to get methadone from a source that is not a medical source? And because if you didn't want to give up heroin, methadone is really kind of an okay substitute. I'm sorry. Katie, did you have a response to Representative Holmes?
Through the chair, Representative Holmes, Representative Seaton is very concerned about the need for a minor who's addicted to nicotine or addicted to tobacco to be able to quit, and we are willing to come out with the best, commit to coming with the best language possible to draw that line between promoting the availability of this product to a minor and allowing them the real possibility to quit.
Thank you. And, Mr. Chairman, that's part of why I'm not going to even think of putting in any kind of amendment today, because I want to make sure it's done carefully and that we balance those two competing interests. So it's just an issue, a question on the record going forward to ponder.
Does this go to the floor from here or finance?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, finance.
So it's got a ways to go. Representative Keller?
Same topic. I actually brought a conceptual amendment that I'd like you to consider. On page 2, line 4, just change the and or. And that way, if a, one scenario would be an 18-and-a-half-year-old that his doctor prescribes, then that's all that would be needed to be.
Through the chair, Representative Keller, I understand that changing the and to or on page 2, line 4, would allow a healthcare professional or a parent or legal guardian to provide a product containing nicotine that's not marketed for tobacco cessation to a minor. And the kind of carve-out that we've created has been only for those products that are regulated by the FDA and their intent is for cessation.
Makes sense. I retract my question. My easy fix did not fly.
Great effort. But
any other comments from the committee? We have someone online, Department of Public, Division of Public Health, Andrea Fennedy. Is that a what is it?
Fennedy.
Okay, Andrea, are you online?
Yes, I am.
And you wanted to comment. Please put yourself on the record and then give us your testimony.
Hi, this is Andrea Sinati. I'm the Deputy Section Chief for Chronic Disease Prevention and Health Promotion in the Division of Public Health. And the state funds the Alaska Tobacco Quit Line, which, as you know, provides nicotine replacement therapy to callers. Currently, callers to the quit line who are 18 and older are provided nicotine patches or gum to aid in their cessation. This law, as currently written, and Katie has also mentioned this already, would prevent the provision of NRT to callers who are between the ages of 18 and 19. Because parents are not able to obtain NRT through the quit line to their adult children due to HIPAA, this would effectively restrict current cessation options available to 18-year-olds. So we are certainly in support of this. We are working with Representative Seaton's office on this, and it's just the one minor change from 19 to 18 would bring it into correspondence with the services we provide through the quit line.
I might have missed something. What did you mean from 19 to 18?
18-year-olds.
Oh, ages. Okay. Representative Holmes?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to clarify, you would only need to change it on page 1, line 13. Is that correct? We wouldn't, because the number 19 appears several times. I just want to make sure. It would just have to be changed on line 13. Is that correct?
I think you were thinking it needed to be changed on page 2, line 6. As well as page 1, line 13.
Okay. But thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's right. But in subsections 1 and 2, in section A1 and A2, it would remain 19, but then subsection B, both references would be changed to 18?
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to make sure if we were going to amend it, but we did it correctly.
Well, here's your chance. Go ahead and offer a conceptual amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I offer conceptual amendment number 1. Which is on page 1, line 13, delete the number 19 and replace it with 18. And on page 2, line 6, delete the number 19 and insert the number 18.
So you have conceptual amendment number one in front of us. Is there an objection? Seeing and hearing no objection. Conceptual amendment number one is adopted. Brings us back to the bill. It's really like to get this moving so we can make sure that we cover as much as we can today. I'm not sure we'll meet after today, so intend to at least get through the three bills in front of us. Is anyone in the audience wants to testify? Anyone online wants to testify? Closing public testimony brings the bill back before the committee. Is there any more comments on House Committee Substitute for House Bill 224 as amended?
Seems like a good bill, Mr. Chairman.
That's not how we offer it, though. You have to actually give us the language. Say, Mr. Chair. Representative Thompson?
Mr. Chairman, I move the CS for HB 224 version 27-LS0466-I Gardner with conceptual amendments from committee with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal notes.
As amended?
With conceptual amendment.
Okay, good. Is there an objection to moving the bill from committee? Seeing and hearing none. 224 very quickly moves from committee.
We are with so
that,
efficient.
With that, we'll take a brief IDs and make sure we sign everything. Session, we have before us a bill from Senator Meyer, Senate Bill 15, whose title is An Act Relating to Penalties for Certain Alcohol Offenses Involving Persons Under 21 Years of Age Committed by Certain Sex Offenders and Child Kidnappers. So, Senator Meyer, either you or your aide can proceed to explain the bill to us.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll introduce the bill, and then if you have any tough questions, I'll... Christine Marsagan is my staff person who's been working this bill and knows it very well. Mr. Chairman, thank you for hearing this bill and members of the Judiciary Committee. For the record, my name is Kevin Meyer, and I'm a senator in South Anchorage, Senate District O. And I'm here to introduce Senate Bill 15, which would increase the penalties for people who are known sex offenders or child kidnappers who are then caught purchasing or providing alcohol to minors. And as you know, we already have penalties in place for adults who buy for minors. But this would increase the penalty if you are purchasing for minors and you are on the sex registry or a known child.
So by sex offender, we mean a registered sex offender.
Yes, you have to be.
Got it.
Yeah. And so in order to be on that, you have to be a known sex offender of some sort. And so under this bill, again, if you provide to somebody under age 21, if it's, say, a Class B misdemeanor, then if you're on the sex registry, the penalty would automatically go up to the next step and then so forth. Okay. Obviously, everybody here knows there is a strong correlation between alcohol and sexual assault. The intent of this bill is just to stop those who use alcohol as a means to buy for minors and then in return for sexual favors. We all... No, I've heard of folks that drive around and offer to buy for our kids. Sometimes it's for money, sometimes it's for sexual favors. And in my mind, the reason for bringing this bill forward is that's totally disgusting and unacceptable to do something like that. This bill has been heard in, of course, all the Senate committees. Senate actually got three committees: HES, Judiciary, and then Finance. When it picked up a fiscal note, it's passed unanimously in all the committees. So that's why, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate you hearing it in your committee today. We have had several people testify. I don't know if they're available. As you know, things are going pretty quickly right now. It's hard to keep up with this. Anna Carpinetti, who's been traveling with this to answer all the legal technical questions, I think is currently up in Senate Judiciary, if I recall, defending one of the governor's bills. So we'll try to answer any of the legal questions if there is any. Other than that, Mr. Chairman, that is the bill. I appreciate your time and consideration.
Okay. Christine, on the record.
For the record, my name is Christine Marisigan, staffer to Senator Kevin Meyer. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm happy to answer any questions if you have any.
It does have a large fiscal note. It's like $500,000 or so. Coming from GF.
Mr. Chairman, actually, in Senate Finance, the other body, they did put the fiscal note as indeterminate. Our original fiscal note from the Department of Law was indeterminate, and then we had two fiscal notes from the Department of Corrections, one which was discussed in a previous committee. They went back and recalculated that fiscal note, and then they came back with another one, and then when it was brought up to Senate Finance, it was really scrutinized, and they decided that it really ought to be an indeterminate fiscal note, very similar to the Department of Law. So you now should have two fiscal notes that are both indeterminate from both the Department of Law and the Department of Corrections, sir.
And it did indicate, what, 3.5 additional convictions each year? It seems like a low number to me.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's just a difference in opinion on how to do the fiscal notes. The Finance Committee said, you know, you're not going to know from one year to the next how many of these known sex offenders are going to buy for minors, so it should be indeterminate. And I think what was the corrections said, well, based on the average over the past 10 years, there's been at least three that have been caught providing for minors, 3.5 that have been caught providing for minors that were on the sex registry. So it was just a difference of opinion on the fiscal note.
Mm-hmm. Well, adding child kidnappers just overwhelmed me almost, I said. I mean, we haven't even thought about that. So do you have any committee questions? Representative Keller?
I must be being dense here, but on the fiscal note, second in the comments there, 3.5 convictions per year, increase of 2,579 man days per year.
Defenders, prosecutors, judges, correction officers.
Considering there's 365 days a year, right? We're talking. we get a conviction, that means two more state employees in Department of Corrections. I mean, nearly. I mean, am I doing the math right?
No.
No. What am I doing wrong here?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, man days refers to a day that a prisoner will spend in jail, not two of the employees. So they're assuming that some of these will be felonies, some of them will be misdemeanors, and that there will be an average of 860 additional nights in jail.
I wasn't
because you're right, that would be a lot of employees.
I had to clear it up before we're on.
Any other committee conversation here? Seeing and hearing none, let's move to Anna Seppa, Alaska Addiction Professionals Association. Hadn't heard that one before. Can you, first of all, can you hear me?
I can. Can you hear me all right?
You're fine. Go ahead and proceed. Put yourself on the record and give us your testimony.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Anna Seppa. I am the Executive Director of the Alaska Addiction Professionals Association.
I'm going to interrupt you for the sake of the Secretary, S-A-P-P-A-H, correct? Is that a yes?
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead and proceed.
Thank you. I also serve as a beneficiary member on the Governor's Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse. I'm a person in long-term recovery from substance abuse and also a survivor of several instances of alcohol-related sexual assault and abuse. I'm speaking today in support of SB 15. I believe that it is important to acknowledge the potential for abuse that occurs when an adult provides alcohol and other drugs to minors. This enables sex offenders and other predators to potentially victimize minors who become judgmentally impaired when under the influence. Predators who provide any mind or mood-altering substance to minors should be punished for these offenses. The pain of living with a history of sexual assault or abuse can be devastating to adolescents. Please support SB 15 and give our communities another tool to promote justice when dealing with predators who would use any means to victimize our youth. Thank you for allowing me to testify. Thanks.
You're more than welcome. I'm sorry to hear about your troubles, but you're really a good testifier for us. Doug Moody, public defender, are you online?
Mr. Chair, this is Douglas Moody from the Public Defenders.
Okay, did you want to testify or are you available for questions only?
I'm available for questions.
All right, thank you. Is there anyone else? I'm sorry.
Ask him, since we've got him online.
Sure, go ahead.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Holmes, go ahead.
Thank you. I was just wondering if we could get Mr. Moody just to weigh in on whether the public defenders, if they have any thoughts on the bill.
She asked if you would like to contribute just a few sentences of thoughts on Senate Bill 15.
Representative Holmes, through the chair. My only real concern, or our only real concern about this bill, because it's mostly just a policy position about what sentence you're going to give, is I think there's a possibility that people that aren't being targeted by the bill, or the intended targets, the predators, are going to get scooped in out in the bush where you may have a house party going on, and you've got, you know, somebody at the house who's properly or improperly providing alcohol to somebody. The police get called. There's no predatory conduct going on, you know, anything along those lines. You know, party just got out of hand. But a person now is going to get an elevated sentence when it should have been, you know, your typical misdemeanor contributing. I don't think those, I mean, from what I had heard from the sponsor, and that doesn't sound like the target population. And I would hate to see that, you know, that a bill scoop up other people other than predators.
Christine?
Representative Holmes, through the chair. I know that this is something that's come up in the past when people have said, well, what if you have a graduation party and somebody's providing some alcohol, and I mean, these aren't really the people that you're going after. Well, first of all, I'd like to point out the bill specifically says that the person has to be on the sex offender registry list. This is somebody who has been convicted of a sex offense. And then secondly, some of the statistics that we've looked at in other studies have said that, you know, oftentimes sexual assault happens by people you know. Could have been an uncle, could have been a cousin, could have been a brother, could have been a father, could have been, I mean, it could have been somebody that you know, and in a situation where alcohol or drugs are being provided to somebody who is underage, who should not be having any alcohol, that is one of those kind of situations that is ripe for that kind of situation where somebody can sexually take advantage of a younger person and lure them into sexual activity. And while the incidences, I think, are fewer where you've got like where it's a family situation and maybe there's no hint of impropriety going on, I think the kind of overwhelming numbers that we have in the state of Alaska, I mean, Anchorage alone, 2006 to 2007, over half of all sexual assaults involve alcohol. A third of those sexual assaults happen to people under the age of 19. I think it kind of points more towards that we do need another tool and toolbox to be able to keep these people away from young people and providing them alcohol.
So are you suggesting that a sex offender or a child kidnapper should not throw a kegger for high school students?
Mr. Chairman, absolutely. And I think, again, the public defender is absolutely right. This is a policy call. And I don't think, first of all, being a parent of underage kids, I don't want them going to parties if they're underage, but certainly don't want them going to a party at a known sex offender's house.
Yeah. What would happen if the party was thrown by a parent, as is usually the excuse? They're going to drink anyway. I'd rather have them drink in my house. And the house, one of the people invited is a registered sex offender. Would the presence of the registered sex offender pull everybody into the mix?
Chair Gatto, it actually specifically is the sex offender providing the alcohol to the person who's under the age of 21.
Okay, got it. On the record. Any other questions? Representative Holmes?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just trying to, it's hard because on the one hand, exactly, you don't want registered sex offenders throwing keggers for underage kids. I'm right there with you. I'm just trying to kind of flesh out the hypothetical from Mr. Moody. and this is probably a better question for Department of Law, but you know, you've got the party, the situation we just had that we were just discussing, where somebody else is throwing the party. The parents are throwing the party, or it's a family party and they're underage kids. You know, I don't know who's on the sex offender registry. So, you know, somebody shows up at the party with a six pack of beer to contribute. You know, it's kind of bring your own. Everybody contributes. It's kind of a potluck style. Some people bring a six pack of beer. Some people bring potato chips. Some people bring hot dogs. Turns out that
bourbon.
It's brought by the person. So they're not necessarily bringing it with the intent to serve it to underage. They're just sort of contributing it to the kitty. How does that work out? I mean, I'm just not sure where that is.
Representative Holmes to the chair. Under the provisions here in CSSB 15, lines 4, 5, and 6 specifically, it actually addresses like the actual furnishing or delivering of alcoholic beverages to persons under the age of 21. And that also includes in the home, that includes people who rent rooms for the purposes of providing alcohol to people who are under age 21, and it also includes the possession of liquor in a dwelling. And there's other statutes that also address this idea of, okay, it's in my home, I'm the adult, I'm the parent, and I have the kids, and it's still furnishing and providing, and so it's still, once again, it's you know, it's still against the law, but at the same time, it's, once again, the bill only would affect the person that was providing, that was on the sex offender registry list. So we're really looking at these folks that are using this as a grooming tool rather than, you know, a big party, everybody's there, you don't know who's who or what's what, but it specifically goes for the person that has already shown a tendency to be a predator on younger people.
Shot in the dark. Is there a child kidnapper registry?
Not that I'm aware of, sir.
Questions? Representative Grunberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question here, and I'm not sure if it's appropriate to ask the Senator or Christine. Do we have anybody on the line, anybody else for this bill?
We just have the public defender and the woman from Alaska Addiction Professionals Association.
I'm going to ask the public defender. The name of the public defender again?
Doug Moody.
Doug Moody. I'm going to ask if it's okay. Mr. Moody, is that okay? Mr. Moody, this is my question here. If the penalties for these crimes in the bill are raised for sex offenders, how will that affect the penalties for breaking the terms of their probation? If this crime is raised for a misdemeanor instead of a violation, will the sex offender face a stronger penalty for violating the terms of his or her probation or registry?
Mr. Moody?
Representative Grunberg to the chair. If any sex offender is brought before the court or for a probation violation or for front of the parole board for a parole violation, because they still happen to be on probation or on parole when this violation occurs, the increase in the penalties isn't necessarily going to have any greater impact on what punishment the parole board or the court meets out for a probation violation. Because the court takes all that, has sort of a finite amount of, the court has the suspended time that it can mete out, the parole board has the parole time that it can mete out, and they always, both those entities always take all the factors into consideration now when they punish a violator. What it does is just change it. I mean, a certain group, if somebody's still on probation if they have the prior felony, because they have a prior sex felony, you know, for a certain group of them, they'll now get another felony, which will be an increased punishment on the new charge, because what would have been, you know, a misdemeanor contributing is now a felony, a C felony. So it only really affects the new penalties. The parole board or probation, a court imposing probation imposing the probation sentence still has the authority to give them all their time if they thought the guy was a bad predator.
May I inquire?
That answers your question.
And I assume they could impose this so the sentence for this crime would run consecutively to the suspended portion of the other crime that's now being imposed because of the violation. They could be consecutively sentenced without violating the Constitution, right?
Representative Grunberg, through the chair, the court would actually have to impose the sentence consecutively to any previous sentence. So that any previously suspended time that was imposed because of a new crime being sentenced under this statute is going to be consecutive.
May I continue, please? Originally, when I looked at the bill, and I'm talking about the introductory paragraph A on page 1, lines 7 through 11, I was concerned because there was no scienter requirement, no knowledge. It says that involved a person under 21. No showing in the text of this that the accused would have to know the person was under 21 or at the very least act with criminal negligence. And it was almost, it seemed to me on the face of this, was almost a strict liability crime. But then I looked at the underlying three statutes, 0416, 051, 055, and 057, and I guess you took the other back. But I can just tell you folks that the last two sections, 055 and 057, do have either a knowledge or a criminal negligence requirement. However, it does not appear that section 051 operates in quite the same way. Mr. Moody, do you happen to have a copy of AS 0416051?
Yes, I do.
Okay, the members have it too. And I'm slightly confused. I'm not intimately familiar with the statute. It's been a long time since I've read it. I don't know if I've ever read it before. But it says that in sub, it doesn't seem to have the penalty in here. That must be somewhere else in AS 0416051. But it says under sub D that you're acting with criminal negligence, and it's a class E felony. If number one, you're acting with criminal negligence, number two, within the 5 years preceding the violation, you've previously been convicted under this section. And I'm not sure whether the number two is connected by the to the rest of the thing. If there should be an and or an or under sub B, I can't tell whether one or two are conjunctive or disjunctive. I realize, Senator Meyer, I'm kind of looking at you, that we're getting into this underlying statute here. But I'm thinking that there are some deficiencies in the statute. Number one, Mr. Moody, do you know if sub 1 and sub 2 here in the existing statute are alternative requirements? I assume they are. They're not conjunctive requirements. Do you know?
Representative Grunberg, through the chair, you're talking about D sub 1 and D sub 2?
Yes, sir.
Or, okay.
That's it. See, it looks to me like it becomes a Class C felony if either within the last 5 years you've previously been convicted under this or a similar section, or if the person who receives the beverage negligently then causes serious injury or the death of another person while under the influence. I can't believe that the legislature intended them both to have been the requirement. It would seem to me they're alternatives. Do you know? This is not well drafted.
Representative Grunberg to the chair.
Wow.
Sort of structurally, it reads as if the or was left out.
That's the way it looks to me. And I think
that it isn't just a drafter's error. I would argue to the court that it's required. But I can't. I haven't prepared.
No, no.
I haven't researched this, so.
Of course.
Probably need Mr. Luck up.
Of course, that is something. Or they, you know, I just had the staff hand me a note. She thinks it might be and if they applied the rule of lenity, that would make this pretty much meaningless. You know, but anyway, that's one question I have. The other question is, it does not appear that sub A in section 051 requires any scienter. And I don't know, so in other words, we could, by, if there's a violation of 051, and then in 059 here, there's no scienter requirement either, then if that forms the basis, the violation of 051 forms the basis for the violation of 059, there might well be no scienter in that application. And I have some constitutional questions about that, because there are some very basic cases that require for serious crimes that there be some knowledge or some mental state. And we do not have anybody here from the Department of Law. And I just need to have those two questions answered. I'm sorry, Senator Meyer, but those are serious questions.
I think they're excellent questions, and it's my intent to set this bill aside. We will therefore have to meet on Friday.
That's fine, if that's okay.
If we can't meet on Friday due to a conflict with session, then we'll find a time
absolutely
to meet before we head home.
Absolutely.
But I think those are important enough questions, and I think they need to be answered in judiciary before we vote up or down on this bill. So with that in mind,
Mr. Chair, if I may, that's why Anna Carpinetti has been great. She's, like I said, she's been traveling with us for all these committees for questions like that we can't answer. So that's fine. We'll make sure, hopefully, that her or somebody from the Department of Law is here to answer those questions. And perhaps we're taking dubious notes here, or perhaps we can get those even answered before the committee starts.
And
go ahead.
These questions, some of the questions are from Gretchen and Ms. Staff, who's in the audience here, so that's why I'm reading them. She has two other questions, if I may, Mr. Chair. The intent of the bill is to get at adults who are using alcohol to coerce minors into sexual acts. But then she says, however, most of the people, and I'm not going to get into a deal whether it's most or some or many. I'm going to say some of the people who are using alcohol to coerce minors into doing sexual acts are not registered sex offenders. So this bill doesn't get at them. And if, in fact, your intent through the chair to Senator Meyer is to get at people who are giving people alcohol for an illicit purpose like sexual act or whatever it is, do you want to just limit it to sexual people who've registered, or do you want to make it broader than that? You got you could say that anybody who does it for that purpose, or you could say either that they're registered sex offenders and they're doing this, or that they're doing it for the other purpose, or what. Since we're going to be thinking about this, and Gretchen has obviously thought more about this than I, but I'm just kind of giving you something to think about. That's the second question. And she says, and I'm not sure I understand this, sex offenders who haven't committed crimes against minors are improper targets of the bill. I see. What she is saying is you can be a sex offender if you urinated in public and you happen to have been caught out in the park and going behind a bush. Don't have anything to do with a minor. And so this may cast a net slightly too broadly if you have somebody who happened to have done that, for example, gone out in the woods and just done it, and then happens to have given liquor to minors. And I'm just wondering if something to think about, whether you want to get at those people or not. I see Christine shaking her head. I'd welcome any kind of, through the chair, any response to that. Or you want to think about it, I don't know.
Representative Grunberg, through the chair. Some of these were discussed in Senate Judiciary when somebody had brought up, well, you know, you could be put on the sex offenders list if you were somebody who had, like, exposed yourself, you know, indecent exposure, or if you'd been caught doing groping and things like that. Just because you were convicted of a sex offense does not necessarily mean you were on the sex offender list. And the sex offender list means that sometimes you're on there for a period of time depending on the severity of your crime. So with the example of public exposure of genitalia, for example, one of the examples that was brought before us and the Department of Law responded was, well, you know, to be on the sex offender registry list, you would have had to expose your genitalia to somebody who was under the age of 15 twice and be convicted of it twice before you were on there. So once again, we have discussed what do you do when you broaden and you cast the net large, writ large, because if you really want to go for anybody who ever provided alcohol to somebody who was underage, and mind you, in 2010, there was over 300 people who did that. So keep that in mind. On the same token, once again, 2006 to 2007 in the city of Anchorage, you know, they had reported something like 350 sexual assaults, half of which we know involve alcohol. So what are we doing? We're trying to look at those people who have a propensity, who we know are probably out there and have predatory actions that would have the access and would be caught, in fact, purchasing or providing alcohol for somebody who was underage, rather than waiting for the much, much worse outcome, which is you come later and it's the act has already happened and then you're going for the sexual offense. So we're kind of thinking a little bit outside the box in terms of looking at how do we stop this really increasing out of control rate of sexual assault against minors. And this is once again another tool in the toolbox to sort of get at that problem.
That helps a lot. And I'm going to have 24 hours or so to think about this. And Gretchen, I'm going to ask you to work with these folks too.
About 45 hours.
Oh, 45. Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. So I'm happy to put in some time and if anybody else is interested.
Representative Keller?
I just want to say that I'm still stuck on the projection by Department of Corrections that it's 3.5 in each section there, 3.5 convictions more a year. I mean, that, to me, I can't think of a better recommendation for your bill. I mean, you know, if that the problem being out there and they're saying this will yield that result, it just... you know, very positive to me. Terrible at that level of abuse must be out there, but I guess I'm naive.
On page 2 of the handout we got, which was page 831 and page 832, on page 832 in the upper left it says double jeopardy violation. I just want to put this, make this pretty clear. The trial court violated defendant's double jeopardy rights by sentencing him for both contributing to the delinquency of a minor and for furnishing alcohol to a minor for the single act of furnishing alcohol to a minor. And you could go on and read the rest, but they said the two counts needed to be merged, to be fair, and they did that. Mm-hmm. So there are times when you can't just add the offenses and stack them up. When they really amounted to something quite similar. Okay, Representative Holmes, when you were gone, said we're going to set this bill aside. We have some other issues. We expect Annie, or hopefully Annie, will be here on Friday. Before we go to the next bill, let me just ask a question. We could meet Friday, we could meet Thursday. It's probably more efficient for us to meet Thursday, but I'm not sure if you have conflicts during these hours, so we need to know that.
I do. I have transportation from 1 to 3.
Okay. I think we shut down for the year unless there's
We do have transportation tomorrow. We have two bills that we'll be hearing. It shouldn't be very long, so we probably won't use the whole 2 hours, but we do have a transportation committee tomorrow.
Can we do 3?
What time are you talking about?
That should be free for me, but...
Is 3 to 5 adequate?
Three to five. I have Hess.
Oh, you have Hess. Okay.
About midnight to 2.
Yeah. Have fun.
Okay. So
I don't know how the morning looks for anyone.
We have state affairs.
We're left in the morning.
And then the floor.
Yeah, so it's getting cumbersome. We'll keep your eye on basis. We'll plan on Friday at the regular time. With that, we'll set this bill aside. Thank you, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Senator.
Christian.
It's a good drive,
This whole trying to get bills out and help people.
Can't hear.
This is the other one.
Oh, right now?
I don't think the transportation should take that long, but
yeah,
seems like it's too intrusive. Yeah. Okay, well, we're still on the record. We have Senate Bill 78 by Senator McGuire, and we have Senator McGuire's aide here who will be telling us about Senate Bill 78. We sure seem to do a lot of alcohol in this committee. Maybe we need our own kegger. I don't know. Okay, so with that...
is this our happy hour?
It sure is. Put yourself on the record, and then we'll proceed with committee substitute for Senate Bill 78.
For the record, my name is Esther Temple, and I am staff to Senator Liesl McGuire. The senator is in the Senate Judiciary Committee and sends her regrets that she cannot be here. She was waiting outside for a little while, but her other duties called, so I have been sent here to speak on this bill.
Mr. Chair, I think we need to, people don't know who you are. We are all familiar with Josh Temple, and this is Mrs. Temple.
Anybody? She married Josh.
I did. I was
We're glad to see you.
Okay, so the intent of the committee substitute for Senate Bill 78 is twofold. The first section of the bill seeks to provide equal treatment to limited liability companies and foreign limited liability companies, also known as LLCs, in the liquor liability context. So that they will be treated as they are in the business world generally. The second and third sections of the bill seek to provide a limitation of liability for a taxi or limousine driver who gets in an accident while driving an intoxicated person's vehicle from a licensed premise. Presently, persons engaged in businesses commonly use LLCs instead of corporations, while leaving intact the limited liability of the LLC members for all other business purposes. And as the statute is currently written, Alaska Statute 04.21.035 is an exception to the protections against individual liability offered to partners of properly registered and maintained LLPs and to members of properly registered and maintained LLCs. So what it does is that partners of LLPs and members of LLCs are not relieved of the obligation or the liability otherwise imposed upon a liquor license holder under Title IV. So in order to avoid that result in current statutes, LLCs may find themselves doing business as a corporate entity in order to seek limited liability protection. And LLCs are routinely used in Alaska as limited liability protection entities in place of corporations. So it kind of goes around and they have a conflict. So CS Senate Bill 78 amends the existing statute to state that the liability will be imposed only on partners of limited liability partnerships and foreign limited liability partnerships, but will no longer apply to a LLC or a foreign LLC. The other portions of Senate Bill 78 are kind of a Good Samaritan bill. This was for taxi cab operators who transport intoxicated persons and those who drive an intoxicated person's motor vehicle from a licensed premise. And the legislation was originally passed in 2004 with 39-0 votes in the House and 20-0 in the Senate, but it had a sunset date for 2007, and that was overlooked, so the bill has never come back to the legislature. And this portion of the bill has helped to create a deterrent for those who might otherwise drive intoxicated if they are unable to find another means of transportation. And it grants taxi cab companies some legal immunity in the event that an accident occurs, except in the case of recklessness, gross negligence, or intentional misconduct. And the bill recognizes that there are times when a person may be above that 0.08 blood alcohol limit, and because of whatever reason they need their car the next morning to go to work or whatever, they may make the bad decision to try and drive home. And so this bill kind of allows the intoxicated person and his or her vehicle to be brought to their house without the taxi cab operator fearing liability. And without this bill, a lot of transportation companies would not participate in this program because they would fear liability and they would not be covered under the insurance policy. And so that is the end of my testimony, and I'm open to any questions from the committee.
Two things. We see ads that say, take the keys, don't let friends drive drunk. If you take the keys, there's no implied permission. Is that covered under 0965315, which is the one that you said had sunsetted with the descriptions of all of the ways that a person could help a person above 08 to get his car home? Or her?
Mr. Chair, I believe that in Section D on page 3, lines 3 through 5, I believe kind of illustrates what is meant as consent. But I think that in this case, I believe that even if you were to take the keys away from the intoxicated person, that it would be considered consent.
And the other minor point is for the secretary, Temple is spelled E-L, not L-E. Am I correct?
Yes.
Thank you. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm familiar with the second part of the bill, which we passed in the legislature several years ago. I think you were here, Representative, mm-hmm. and Representative Lynn. And we passed in this, it was Representative Anderson's bill, it's a good bill. My question does not relate to that. My question relates to Section 1. Now, people are going to have to sort of go through a sort of a very careful logical argument here. Looking at the language here, mainly the stuff that's repealed is what I'm interested in. Currently, and you have to look at this statute, currently and this, by the way, this is a long introduction to my question, but I am going to get to a question. Responsibility of limited liability organization members, notwithstanding any other provision of AS 10.50 or AS 3206, a member of a limited liability organization holding a license is not relieved of liability because the license is held by the organization. Okay. What they're doing here is saying that limited liability partnerships retain individual liability. But the kicker is that if your organization is not an LLP, but it is an LLC under Chapter 10.50, which is the Alaska Revised Limited Liability Company Act, now you're going to be immunized individually. You're going to escape liability. It's going to allow these folks who have these licenses to change the form of the organization so it's not a limited liability partnership, but it's a limited liability company. And the law currently makes them individually liable if they're a limited liability company. That is a significant difference, and I'm not necessarily comfortable with that. When I spoke to your people yesterday or the day before, we kind of glossed over that. I didn't know what was happening, but why should we have Section 1? I am just looking at it. I have some at least questions. I'm not a corporate lawyer. We have one over here, fortunately. But I have some questions before I can support Section 1.
Representative Grunberg, through the chair, I believe the intention of why they did not include limited liability partnerships is that often limited liability partnerships are used for medical organizations or maybe forms of, you know, legal corporations, and therefore I don't think most LLPs do not hold a liquor license. And so LLCs, I think that at least what was brought up in testimony in other committees was that the LLCs hold liquor licenses, but they would create a corporation, like a corporate entity, that would hold only the liquor license as an asset in order to skirt around this issue. So that if the limited liability company is allowed to hold the liquor license, that it would be, I mean, it's not like they're creating a shell corporation just for this liquor license.
That troubles me. You're allowing people to change the current law where if they have an LLC, they're individually liable. That's the current law.
No, that's not.
Well, that's the way the thing reads.
I think the current law is saying that if they are a member of an LLC or a partner of an LLP, so it's both of them. And what this bill does is to take out the limited liability.
Am I?
Sorry.
Representative Holmes, throw your voice
in
here.
Yeah, I think they're having two parallel conversations. Esther, right now, so my understanding of what's happening is they're actually, LLCs aren't holding liquor licenses precisely because there's no protection here. And they're being held mostly by corporations. And the corporations are, what type of immunity do the corporations have?
I believe that the limited liability protection is there for, like, the members of the corporation and not, yeah.
So the issue as I see it, Mr. Chairman, is that they're being held by corporations, and the question is, do we want to prefer one type of entity over the other? And do we want to allow, because limited liability companies, that's the whole point of having a limited liability company, is that it's a fairly streamlined way to organize, and most companies are doing that these days. So the question is, if they're just forming as corporations and have all the protections as a corporation, then what's the difference between letting them file as an LLC? That's kind of where the question is.
And through the chair, I think we may have somebody online to testify who may be able to better answer the question than I.
Think that's the
we actually have a few people online. We have Doug Moody for questions. We have someone from the company, Dorsey and Whitney.
Who is that?
Yes, Dick Rostin.
Dick Rostin would be a good person.
Hey, Dick Rostin, are you online?
Yes, I am.
Please put yourself on the record, and probably Representative Holmes will have a question for you.
This is Dick Rostin, R-O-S-S-T-O-N. I'm a lawyer partner with Dorsey & Whitney, LLP, law firm in Anchorage.
Okay.
And I'd be glad to testify, but if Representative Holmes has a question first,
Well, go ahead and testify first, because there's seven of us around this committee table, and we'd like to hear what you have to say.
Thank you. As has been stated before, the bill would do away with look-through liability for members of LLCs, so that members of LLCs would be treated the same as shareholders of corporations under Title IV. Right now, corporations can hold a liquor license, and there is no look-through liability for the owners of a corporation unless there's something known as piercing the corporate veil. We're asking for the same treatment for LLCs that would hold a liquor license, and the reason for this is a couple-fold. First, and Bob Klein, I believe, is also online and can testify directly to this later. He's chair of the ABC. But when this particular statute was first enacted, LLCs were relatively new to Alaska and actually to the country, and people didn't understand them that well. And I think originally, people thought they're more like partnerships. Well, in fact, in the business world, they're treated much more like corporations. And They offered, some, as Representative Holmes mentioned, some streamlined ways of running themselves, which makes them more attractive for many people, and particularly for small groups of investors to own limited liability companies. And so I think the original enactment, we're trying to correct, I guess, what is an error, or what we perceive as an error, because in the business world today, people routinely use LLCs instead of corporations. And everywhere in Alaska, outside of this particular statute, they are treated the same for the owners for limited liability purposes. I have several clients who would like to use LLCs, but instead, to hold liquor license, but instead they've gone and created a separate corporation simply because of the statute, and it's been inefficient for them and more cumbersome. I think sort of in a nutshell, that is my testimony. I could go on further, but I don't believe, as Ms. Temple mentioned, the LLPs, the reason we didn't strike at LLPs was precisely because LLPs are usually used by medical or legal companies looking, and they're not used in the liquor liability context. And I certainly have not had any clients seek to hold liquor licenses through LLPs. Thank you.
Yeah. Representative Grunberg has a question.
It's just a comment. I appreciate hearing what this is. That educates me, and I no longer have a problem with Section 1. So we, as far as I'm concerned, we don't have to go down this road any further.
And the other attorney, Representative Holmes, problem with Section 1?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with what Mr. Roston said.
Okay. Well, let's hear now from Sylvia Viamedes, Anchorage Char. Sylvia, are you online?
My name is Sylvia Viamedes, Director of Anchorage Char, and I'm testifying on behalf of Senate Bill 78. For the tax cap liability. And I think the Off the Road program, which is, you probably have heard of, was a program that was definitely a plus with the actual legislation that you have in your hands. Although the legislation was sunsetted and we overlooked the sunset date, we would like for this to be reinstated and for the program to keep working. If you don't know what the off the road program is, it's a program that's funded by the industry, the Alaska Highway Safety Office, and also Anchorage Char. And what happens is the participating establishments of our membership, they will call the taxicab company. Two taxicabs will come. One of them will drive the patron home, and the other one will follow with the patron's vehicle home, you know, the transport of that vehicle, so that the patron and the car arrive home safely in the same time. When we did our survey back in 2003 and 2002, the majority of our patrons, you know, and they were very honest, they said, I do not want to leave my car behind because I might need it the next day for work or vandalism or towing. As you know, something as simple as towing. So to alleviate that problem, Off the Road was born. And to be able to succeed and keep going with the Off the Road program, we need this legislation.
Okay, thank you very much. We have another person to testify. Bob Klein, ABC Board and
yes.
And State Char. Is that you?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Actually, I have three hats today. Thank you for letting me testify.
Okay.
My name is Bob Klein, K-L-E-I-N, and I am privileged to be the current chairman of the ABC board. I also serve on the board of State Char, where I am head of the Government Affairs Committee. And then I earn my living as director of sales and marketing for Brown Jug Stores here in Alaska. If I may, Mr. Chair, let me start with the Off the Road program. Basically, I think what the legislature is asking, we're asking the legislature to do this year is just fix something that never should have happened, and that was in 2007, everybody just missed the sunset portion of the wonderful program. when it was passed unanimously in both houses in 2004, everybody thought it was a wonderful program, but just put the sunset in case we had missed anything. Unfortunately, 2007 came and went. We all missed it. It's one which is, it's a program which is nationally recognized and has done incredible good in the cities that that are using it.
What have we been doing since 2007? Have we pretty much followed the 2004 legislation, which sunsetted, or have we been stuck trying to do alternative things?
Mr. Chair, since nobody realized that the 2007 had come and gone and it was sunsetted, we, for the most part, just kept going. Yeah. Since it was recognized, groups like Anchorage Char have scrambled to get some coverage insurance, but it's very expensive.
Okay, so we got lucky.
Yes.
Sort of.
But it's a wonderful program and shouldn't go away, Mr. Chair. As far as LLC, if I may, I was on the board at the time that LLC was introduced into Title IV, and Mr. Rossen is very accurate in that it was, at that time, we knew very little about what they were, about the practices which would evolve. In fact, some of the language which was quoted today from Title IV groups LLC or LLP in the same phrase. When it was presented to us, it was kind of LLCs were kind of characterized as sort of general partnerships, but a little different. And to it was never the intent, as far as I know, of the legislature, of the administration who cobbled the language, or of those of us on the ABC that commented to remove corporate-type protections from this this vehicle. So again, I'd encourage you to pass this legislation.
Okay. Thank you for testimony. Is there anyone else online that wants to testify on Senate Bill 78?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Randall Call, C-A-L-L. I would like to testify briefly, if I may.
Okay, we had you down for available for questions, but if you'd like to testify, you're our guest. Go ahead.
Thank you. I'll be brief. I'm general counsel for Alyeska Resort and the president of Alyeska Resort Development Company, and I won't repeat testimony that has been given, but I would like to give as an example why this bill is important. When the current owners of Alyeska Resort acquired Alyeska Resort in 2006, the investors included in that acquisition were investors in several other states. And at the time the resort was acquired, the acquisition entities were all limited liability companies, which is very typical in this day and age for a number of reasons, but usually that is how individuals invest in these smaller investment opportunities. And at the time we acquired the resort, we actually, because of this issue, we actually had to create a corporation to hold the liquor licenses at Alyeska Resort because of this, I will call it a quirk, but because of this particular statute in Alaska, thereby requiring the owners of Alyeska Resort to have a separate corporation to hold the liquor licenses in order to encourage investors from out of state to invest and not have that pass-through liability where they wouldn't have it otherwise in other states. That's my testimony. I'm happy to answer any questions if there are any, Mr. Chairman.
Well, we appreciate your testimony. Is there any questions from the members on the committee? Well, thank you again for your testimony. We have no members from the committee. Is there anyone else online that wants to testify on Senate Bill 78? Anyone in the room that wants to testify on Senate Bill 78? Seeing and hearing none, we'll close public testimony, bringing it back to the committee. And we've already asked the committee if they want to testify. Representative Thompson.
Yeah, I just had one observation. I want to make sure on the record that the language in Senate Bill 78 does not prohibit or limit an injured driver or passenger from pursuing damages from any other automobile policy, which may be available to them under the uninsured or underinsured policy coverage under normal procedures of stacking automobile insurance under AS 2822221.
Through the chair, Representative Thompson, I believe you are correct that they are allowed to stack, or that it doesn't, I believe, unless Representative Grunberg.
Grunberg.
He was there on the committee, and I think he's very familiar with.
Go ahead.
You cited a statute in Title 28, and I got looking at that. Do we have a copy of that statute?
Here's a copy. You got what a copy there.
228. Oh, I see. Your question is whether anything in here limits your ability to go under a UI or under insured policy.
Right.
I don't believe it does. Does it?
I want to make sure on the record.
Yeah.
If I could ask Ms. Temple, I don't. I think the answer to that's a no. Is it not?
Yeah.
Yeah, we agree.
This is where
on the record.
The English language is really clear. I believe the answer is no. Yes. Yes, the answer is no.
Yes.
Got it. I want to make sure we don't miss this.
Yes.
Okay. Well, with all this being said, I'd certainly be happy to move this bill from committee. Can I have a proposal? Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that CS for Senate Bill number 78, which is 27-LS0282/I, be advanced from committee with individual recommendations and fiscal notes attached.
And I certainly want to thank the testifiers and the number of people who said we really made an error by putting a sunset date there. We acted as if the sunset was missing. It's really, excuse me, time to correct that. And there's a lot of reasons to move this bill forward. Representative Grunberg.
I don't recall any bill coming forth. There probably are some others where we put in good faith a sunset. Now, I'm not talking about the normal sunsets, but we sunset a program, and for some reason, nobody, in this case in industry or in the legislature, remembered that. And at some point, and I'm just sort of throwing it out, it might be somebody would want to ask Ledge Research or somebody to do a an inventory and see if there's anything else that would fall into this category. It's almost like the Unclaimed Property Act or the what they call the reappropriations kind of stuff. But this, it's kind of embarrassing to have a good program like this just.
Yes, it is. So. I think if we had iPhones back then, we'd have said 3 years from now, we have a sunset on this bill. And it would have popped up and we said, oh my gosh, quick, find Esther. better submit a bill. Okay, is there any objection to passing from committee?
Nope.
Seeing and hearing none, 78 passes from committee. Let's, I guess we can adjourn.
Yeah.
Any reason not to adjourn? We're adjourned.